We are in this series called Altar, and we started this a few weeks ago. If you've been with us, we've actually been talking about this idea of worship and what worship is and what worship looks like, because we've looked at, in the ancient times, people would go to altars, and that's where they would worship God. Oftentimes, they would build altars like this where it was built out of stones, and they would offer sacrifices and do all sorts of things that, for us, might be strange to our culture, but that's where and how they would worship God. And so we've asked the question, what does it look like for us to worship God? How and where or in what ways do we worship God? And we also introduced this idea, this sort of strange spelling is because it's a play on words, because we also recognize that as we worship and in the ways we worship, that alters us, that shapes us. What we worship actually shapes us and how we worship it. So we've been sort of asking this question for the last few weeks, and we've heard from different folks here in our community about some different sort of ways or angles to think about this idea of worship. And so today we're going to do something slightly different. We're just going to have a conversation, and I thought it would be great to have a conversation with Alyssa Smithley, who is our director of worship here. So Alyssa's going to come on up now, and let's just go ahead and give Alyssa a hand. Yeah. And Alyssa, you don't have a guitar with you today, so I know it's going to be hard, and you're not behind a microphone, but you've got one of these microphones, and so that's so you can do the dance routine.
Right.
You've got planned for us a little later. Okay. Because that's how you worship God, is through dance.
Mostly.
Should we just do that now, or?
No. I'm going to wait till the end, once I'm warmed up.
Okay.
A little bit.
Just giving her a hard time. So, but Alyssa oversees worship here, and if you're new or if you have been coming, we have several different people that do worship regularly, but Alyssa sort of oversees the whole thing. And so I thought as we talked about this, worship's interesting because worship sort of has a whole life aspect to it. Worship isn't just what we do on Sunday mornings. And yet what happens on Sunday mornings is important when we gather and we sing songs just like we just did. That's part of worship, and that sort of leads us into worship. So here's sort of the big question for you to start off with is, what would you say, like, give us a definition of worship in your mind, or how do you understand, or what does worship mean to you?
You didn't want to ease your way into this conversation.
No, let's just jump right into the deep end. Like, tell us, yeah, what does worship mean to you? Like, when you think about worship, what is worship?
Yeah, there's kind of three different metaphors that come to my mind when I think about worship, at least corporately, kind of as we gather. The first one would be just this picture of seeing the smile of God on our lives. And so I'll unpack that a tiny bit so you understand and you're not like, that's super creative and fruity and there's no handles. Yeah, for me, it's kind of this picture of like a father or a mother looking down at their child. And it's just whether they've done something awesome, they just scored the winning goal at the game, or, you know, they maybe did a good job at work or whatever it is. It's just this idea that God sees them and he delights in them, and he's validating their life again. And so I kind of look at that the same way as the smile of God when we worship. I think just like that same picture, like he smiles at us and he delights in us, and when we see that, it's like he's just validating us again. He's just saying, I see you. Like, and when we see him, it just gives us the courage that we need. I think another really good picture of the smile of God metaphor is seen in when David goes up against Goliath. I think he takes a moment where he has to look above all of what's happening and what would maybe keep him from fighting Goliath and being successful. And he just says, like, I see you, and you have this. And I think that's what makes him victorious, like in that story. And so it's a similar sort of picture. The second one would just be this idea of seeing the king who's in the room. And so I think when we start praising from our hearts, I think God delights in that, and he comes and he walks amongst us, if you will. And so similarly, it's seeing him in the room. It's bringing our adoration and praise to him. It's like a yielding of our hearts and seeing the king instead of the people around us or whoever's leading. Yeah. And then the last one would just be singing the song that's inside of us. I think that worship is all about our hearts, and I think that David spoke a ton about that, and there's a bunch of different stories. But I think that that's what God's after is our heart. And so obviously when we're in the middle of worship through song, being able to sing what's on our heart, I think, is one of the most beautiful songs that we could ever sing. And I think it's honestly more probably important than even just singing along with us. And so that would be kind of the third picture that comes to mind.
What if the song that's on your heart that morning isn't a good song? like what if you're not like in this joyful mood? Can you have like a different kind of song in your heart? What does that look like?
I wish I understood that. yeah, I think that's just the realness of it. Like, if you read a lot of the Psalms, like, it's not all puppies and sunshine. I think David, like, genuinely walked through hell sometimes, and a lot of those are just laced with him being real and being like, God, I'm mad at you. Like, God, this is where I'm at. I'm confused. Or, like, are you going to show up? You feel so far from me. And I think that that's just the heart of what we're doing, is just being able to be vulnerable in a sense, and just bringing wherever we're at to him. I think that's part of praise and how it should be. So,
yeah, I like the picture of thinking about him actually being in the room as a king, and oftentimes we can't relate to that understanding of king. That's more of an ancient perspective, but yet I don't often think about it. Like, what if Jesus was sitting right here, or God was sitting here, listening to this, or with us, or among us, like physically here? Like, that changes things to approach it that way. So let me ask you a question. Are there, you mentioned David a little bit. I don't know if you want to talk more about him, or are there other stories or examples from the Bible of people that you see worshiping God in a way that have been helpful for you or formative for you?
The story in Luke 7, it's not usually one that's really referenced much when you talk about worship, but I think that it's a really beautiful picture of a woman who is considered like the town harlot. Like, she's not adored. There's nothing beautiful about her. Like, people don't see her as highly esteemed. And I like that because it's approachable for me. I'm like, I don't feel that way a lot of times. And so I read that and I'm like, yeah, like, I totally get that. But it's just this story of her. She goes to a dinner that a Pharisee is hosting, and she goes in and recognizes Jesus right away. And the story says that she begins to weep at his feet, and she uses her tears to wipe Jesus' feet, and her hair, I picture it as being long and maybe flowy or something. And she gets down and wipes Jesus' feet, which for that culture would have been probably disgusting.
We don't know why she's weeping necessarily. No. So is there something going on in her life, or she feels broken, or something about seeing Jesus leads her to weeping, but she's sort of overcome with emotion when she sees him and she goes to his feet.
Right. And later on it talks about, like, you've been forgiven of your sin, you know, go. But yeah, it's just this idea that she comes to Jesus, and after she wipes his feet, it says that she anoints his feet with perfume. And it said that the perfume is estimated up to like $50,000 worth of wages, which today I'm like, wow, that would have been a lot. But back then it probably was even more. And so, she just gives all that she has to him. It's that same idea that we've been talking about of just like, she sees him and recognizes him and just has to do everything, has to give everything that she has. And it's kind of like what Emily was talking about last week of just sacrifice, and the idea that worship should cost us something. It should be costly. And so I think this story is just a really, really cool picture of somebody doing that. And just gives us an idea of like what that could look like practically speaking. So, yeah.
And the word that comes to mind for me is, you've been talking, when you talk about these metaphors and then even this story, and this is kind of a strange word, but it's the word adoration, like, and that almost sounds feminine. I don't know, it's not like a guy word, you know, adoration, but it's this sense that the Father adores his children, and when we come and worship him, we're reflecting that adoration, or our thankfulness, or our gratitude, or our worship of him, or that we are sort of, in a small way, adoring him and who he is and what he's done in our lives. And I almost see that in this woman that is at his feet as well.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Would you agree?
Yeah.
Okay. You can disagree. You can be like, no, totally missed
Skip.
It. No. Okay, so here's a question for you. As a worship leader, so on a Sunday morning, when we come into the room and you think about leading us, what would you say is your role or your goal when you or Adam or Brian or one of the other worship leaders or even the band, what is your role or goal when you lead us in worshiping on a Sunday?
I definitely think it may not be for Adam the same as it is for me as far as like the metaphors go, but that's kind of how I see it. It's getting me to a point and everyone else to a point where we see the smile of God or we experience the King who's in the room, or we get to a point where we just want to explode and just sing, you know, the song that's on our heart for that morning. I think it's also just getting us to a point where we're excited to enter into conversation with God, because I think that that's really what worship is. It's just bringing our heart and then starting a conversation with Him, because He's excited about that, and that's what He wants from us. So,
yeah. And what do you see as your role in that? Like, how do you help us do that, or what's your part?
So one of my favorite worship pastors used this cute illustration, and I'll see if I can like set it
cute.
Up well enough for you to understand it. Not cute in a girly sense.
Okay.
So it's this idea that you have two friends that you really, really love and maybe know super well, and you want to set them up on a date. And so at some point, if there's the chemistry and all the right, you know, variables that go into that, like, they're going to figure out how to be together and how to do that. And, like, you have to bow out. Otherwise, like, you're the awkward third reel still hanging out with them. Like, and I think it's a similar picture of just, like...
You're the matchmaker.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just the idea that, like, we get to the point where those things are happening and no longer are you looking at me and saying, all right, like, what are we doing, even if that's not physically what's happening, but you're still looking for a sense of direction. But, yeah, you reach a point where, like, you're not worried about all of the physical things that are happening around you. You're just excited to be in God's presence and talking with Him and communing with Him, so...
So it's like your role or job is to introduce us to God or welcome... us, set us up with God on a date, you know. But introduce us or lead us into His presence or help us connect with Him in some way on a Sunday. And then you might even step back from that. I mean, even physically, like sometimes you're singing, and that's helpful for us because it shows us like how to sing and how does the song go if we don't know the song or things like that. But then there's also times where it's you're stepping back and saying, all right, now you just worship in your own way, or you sing, or you connect with God, or you talk to Him in your own way. I don't have to be a part of this anymore.
Right, and we've talked about that quite a bit of here. That's probably a little bit like newer to our culture than you know, other churches that I've been a part of, or maybe other people have been a part of too. But yeah, sometimes I will physically step back from the mic, and I get... like super wrapped up in what's going on too, and yeah, I just want to sing like what's on my heart in that moment, and that's an invitation as well, just to enter into that too if you're in that spot. So yeah,
and we forget sometimes that you're worshiping, like I've heard it said, you're not necessarily the worship leader, but you're the lead worshiper, you know. Sometimes you're just worshiping yourself, and we don't have to worship in the same way you worship, but there's just a sense of how do we on Sunday mornings connect with God in a meaningful way, and what does that look like, and let's try to do that together.
Totally. You know?
Okay, so give us a little bit of background. Let's get practical for a second. If we think about an actual Sunday, how do you as a worship leader like actually pick out songs? How do you think through what songs or what a Sunday service is going to look like? Because I'm sure a lot of people just show up and assume like, yeah, thanks for doing that. I'm glad somebody else planned that and I didn't. But how do you think about it, or how do you plan that as you think about this idea of worship?
Yeah. First, usually it's just starting out by praying and just asking God, like, what is it that maybe I personally need to hear, or what is it that we need to be reminded of that week? I've heard a lot of people say that, like, part of the heart of shaping like theology in people comes from, like the worship pastor, because you're singing these words over and over again. So I think it's just really, really important to be thinking through and praying through the songs. But
and you actually do that, you would do that like a few weeks ahead of time. So you're thinking about 3 or 4 weeks down the road now.
Ideally, right. Ideally. Depends on who's preaching, whose notes I have. Yeah. Usually there's I drop any names, but Stephen. So ideally, yeah, we already know kind of what passage we're going to be focusing on. So maybe, you know, we'll sit and read through that passage or, we know kind of a key theme. And so it's just kind of thinking through and praying through what would flow really well with that. And sometimes it's really successful and sometimes it falls on its face, but yeah.
Or sometimes the Spirit leads
exactly.
us, right?
Okay, yep. No.
So as you think about an actual Sunday, like what does a flow look like or how do you think about songs? I'm sure there's musical aspects to it. Like let's pick songs in the same key.
Right.
And I don't even know what that means, but I know that's a good thing, right? We should do that.
Right. There should be keys, right?
Yeah. Okay. Like piano keys or?
No.
Okay. No. Is there something locked that we're opening with our keys? What's going on here?
Yeah.
Joking. Okay.
Without getting like super nerdy, there's, yeah, obviously other than the practical of transitioning between songs and keys and the musical side of it, there's kind of also a story that's being told or like a journey that we're going on that you may not even be aware of what that's happening. And ideally that's happening every Sunday. Sometimes, like I said, we nail out and other Sundays it's like, oh yeah, we had half of it, great. But yeah, it's this idea, we usually like to start with a song that reminds us of God's presence and that he's the one who initiates worship, not us. And then we like to move to a song that's about creation, like you saw that today, and God's power in the world. And then we kind of move more to a song that's about the idea that God chose us, that he wants to be with us. And then we would move from just the resurrection of Christ, the death and resurrection of Christ, and then like finally like the forgiveness of sins and this idea of, you know, new creation that we're born in him. So,
and there's other pieces that are part of that as well. It's not just the songs that, as we said some words from the book of Psalms this morning, or there's liturgical responsive readings we might do, or right. thinking about even the offering. When we take up the offering, like that's an act of worship because we're giving something, we're worshiping God with money or with something tangible. And then the sermon is a time of listening. And when we take communion, there's sort of a focus on what Jesus has done for us and remembering that. So it's all of those things mm-hmm. is a part of the worship flow. But there's a sense that there's a journey that we're going on. Like right. that would be the hope mm-hmm. that we show up on a Sunday and we're walking for an hour or an hour and 10 minutes or however long we're here. We're moving through this journey of connecting with God in a meaningful way. Mm-hmm. All right. So let me ask, here's a question that some of you might be thinking. What if I'm not a very good singer? Like what if, so you've got a great voice. And you play the guitar, and you know what a key is, and I don't. And what if I'm someone who doesn't feel like I have a great voice, or maybe even I'm new to church, and so I don't even know these songs very well, or this is sort of strange. I don't gather other places and sing with a bunch of people, you know? And what if I look around, or I look up at you, and it feels like this is really moving for you, but it's not moving or emotional for me, or I just don't know how to get into it. What would you say to someone like that?
Firstly, I'd just say, like, I think it's amazing that you're here and that you said yes and, you know, your heart to get out of bed, whether it was early or 5 o'clock at night or whatever. The fact that you're here, I think, is awesome. Like, you've made a choice, so... I think that alone is precious to God, and he sees it, like, as obedience, you know.
But and that's worship.
Like, totally,
just joining
yeah.
the community of faith for an hour on Sunday morning, yeah. even if you don't know the songs or what have you. Like, that's an act of setting aside some time
right.
to engage with God in a meaningful way.
Right. I mean, even I have my days where I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to show up. Like, I'd rather be in bed or
don't say that.
Whatever. Yeah, sorry.
You kind of have to show
probably
up.
Probably a good thing I show up. Yeah. I know Dan's been wanting his big debut, but...
yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think I also would just press into that a little bit deeper and say, like, I think it's totally okay if music is not your number one way of connecting with God. I think, you know, there's a lot of different ways people do that. We've mentioned that a lot of, like, whether that's hiking or sitting on your couch knitting or, you know, whatever that looks like for you. I think that's all right, and there's freedom there. I think when you're here, though, and you're participating in corporate worship, I think there's a lot of things that you can do to overcome that. Some of them are really simple, like if you have a journal, you could, you know, sit and write when the songs are, or when that part of the service is going on. Or I think you could ask yourself questions that are going to propel the conversation, like I was talking about earlier. So maybe that's something like, you know, what do these lyrics mean, or how does this affect me and where I'm at right now in my life? I think you could also just spend time sitting quietly, or you know, if you have your Bible and you feel like God's put a certain verse on your mind, or you know, you even see the words on the screen and you Google it to find a passage that goes with that. You know, I think there's a lot of different ways that you can still choose to engage, and I think that's the challenge, is just not to check out and to know, like, it's totally okay if you're not on the front row singing your heart out with your hands in the air, although I would prefer that. It's not, I don't think that that's, the point of it.
So there's no, like, right way to worship.
No.
Which, but that's worth saying, because you can show up and think there's a right way to worship, and Alyssa has the right way, or this guy over here next to me, whose voice is amazing, is the right way, and I'm the wrong. Like,
yeah.
There isn't a right way to worship in terms of actually worshiping on Sunday morning. And yet, I'm guessing you would still say there it can be something powerful about singing your heart out, or letting go, or, you know, even if it's a joyful noise to the Lord, even if it's a noise. Like, well, so how do we do that? What are some ways that we could let ourselves go or sing more or embrace that, even if I don't feel like I've got a great voice or know the song super well?
I know that I personally have experienced a lot of seasons. I know I'm young, so when I say I've personally experienced a lot of seasons in my old age.
19 years?
Yeah, no, 19. I'm not 19.
I know. That was a joke. 21. Come
<you're>
on.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's... There's something about the power of song, even if there's emotion lacking. You know, I know you've talked about that quite a bit here, and I don't know that it's the emotion of it necessarily as much as it is just like sometimes you need breakthrough in your life. Sometimes you reach a point where like nothing else is doing it. You've tried a lot of things and you're just like, I just feel like I'm at kind of the end of my rope here. And I think that sometimes like just coming in and singing your heart out and going after it, even if everything inside of you is like, I am not there yet. Like, I think there's some power to that. And I think, you know, the Bible talks a lot about our words and the importance that they carry. And when they're released, like that brings life to our being. And so, I've had moments where I come in and I'm just like, I don't want to be here, whatever. And then I just start singing and I just start reminding myself, like, that's the importance of song is to remember and to remind ourselves. And I think sometimes just doing that is obedience in and of itself, and it turns things around for you. And maybe it's not right away, but I've experienced that a lot. I know I have friends that have done that too, and It's just been really cool to watch that. So
it's like a practice or a discipline. I mean, worship isn't just this emotional thing that you do it when you feel great or everything's going well in your life and you have a whole lot of things to thank God for. Although That can be great, but sometimes it is sort of this practice. But once you engage it, there can be something very meaningful about. There's a reason there's a lot of times it's talked about in Scripture, people not just saying, but singing new songs or new words to God.
Right.
And even posture can play a lot in that, You know, so... So we often just stand in here, and it's like, just stand, and we have the words up there. So it's easy to just stand and see the words, but it's okay if you want to sit down. It's okay if you sit the whole time and you don't stand. It's okay if you want to get on your knees. It's okay when some people raise their hands or they open their hands because that's an act of surrender or something meaningful. I mean, what would you say? Do you feel like those postures can be helpful for us as we think about those?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a ton of different examples of what that looks like and how you can approach that. And it's completely biblical. I'm not saying we're going to bring like snakes in here or anything, but
why not? Come on now.
I don't do snakes.
That'll get people
gross.
Dancing. No.
No. Not me. I will be gone. So, I think that our culture has, especially the church, I think that we've done a lot of things with postures and kind of what that looks like. And I look at it and it kind of makes me sad because I think we're like, raising your hand or dancing or walking up and down the aisle or whatever it is that you need to do. Like, oh, that's only for people that are, extremely charismatic or Pentecostal or whatever. And if we don't move, we're Lutherans or Methodists. You know,
right.
Like I've had all these conversations with people before, and I just think that's a bunch of baloney. Like,
which is fascinating, because when the Broncos score, we're all charismatic.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
I mean,
right.
We're jumping up and down and high-fiving,
yeah,
and
right.
Like everyone's excited. And
yeah.
So that emotion or that passion about being engaged, fully present in something, is there for all of us. I mean, we have that.
Absolutely.
So it's just bringing that into worship. And again, that doesn't mean you're always like that way every Sunday, but
right.
It's just bringing all of yourself into it.
Totally.
Yeah. Okay, I want to ask you one more question, and then we're just going to spend some time in worship. And maybe here's a question. What does this look like in your own life? How do you feel like you've grown in this area, or what's your journey been? And maybe even, how have you overcome barriers or even fears? I don't know if that's the word to put on it. Like, how do we overcome sort of the fear of, how do I worship the right way? What does that look like for you personally?
So I grew up in an extremely conservative, like non-denominational church, and I'm thankful for that. So I've been around different worship settings, and even after that I went to like an Assembly of God church in college, and I've experienced a lot of different things. I remember specifically in high school I had a friend who was a part of a, like, it was called a school of worship at that time, and she was going kind of through a personal journey of figuring out what worship looked like for her. And I remember I went with her to a gathering at one point, and it was just like a night of worship. It was a 2-hour-long deal, and I just remember like being in the back of the room, and I was singing, and I hadn't really ever seen like demonstrated in a way that it made me want to do it, if you will, just somebody raising their hand or like getting on their knees or anything like that, where it seemed like approachable for me, like, oh, I can do this too, or like, yeah, I want to look weird like that, or,
yeah.
I just had a lot of fear, and to that point, like, I had cared so much more about what the people around me thought, and, or just what I was going to look like, that I was going to look dumb or foolish, and I just remember having a moment where, like, I really felt like God was just speaking to me, and I was, really being touched by him. And I remember I was just like, man, I'm just going to put my hand up in the air. And I like opened my eye and was like, oh my gosh, my
hand's up in the air. Make sure nobody's
looking. Yeah, like, whoa. So, I really remember like the first time that happened, and it was like little baby steps for me, and it felt dumb, and it feels dumb even talking about it right now. But like, that was really a process for me of coming to a point where I understood, like, I can come to God with literally anything, and that's what he wants, whether it's, my anger or my joy or everything in between. Just like that lady in Luke 7, like, she brought everything. And so, it for me has been little baby steps like that of just continuing to encourage myself to come back. Like, I'm really stubborn, and I get frustrated sometimes, and I have to bring myself back to the point of, like, no, you're bring this to the Lord. Like, he wants it. He delights in it, and he's going to do something awesome with it. And realigning with the smile of God and all of that. But yeah, it's been a journey of almost kind of teaching myself and coaching my own heart and how to do that. And just giving myself permission of, yeah, people are watching me, but you know what? I don't care. Like, I think we have freedom in Christ, and I think it's fear that binds us to do a lot of things. And so, yeah, I think it's just deciding to take another step, even if it makes you feel super uncomfortable, and just continuing to do it because God sees it and he delights in it. And that's genuinely all that matters at the end of the day, you know? So,
yeah. So let's do this. That's a great, I think, encouragement and probably a challenge for most of us. So let me do this. Let me pray and let's just reflect on some of those thoughts. Adam and Brad and the guys are going to come up and we're going to sing a couple more songs and just worship. And so God, it really is our desire to see you as being present in this room right now. To know that you smile over us. To know that you delight in us. Even when we feel ashamed or guilty, we can bring that to you, and you're like the Father who welcomes us home and loves us. To know that you have put a song in each one of us, a song of redemption, a song of life, and that we can sing that song. And we can remember what you have done for us, because it's not about us, but it's really about you. And so I just pray, even today, for all of us here in this room, that we would bring whatever it is that we feel like we're carrying, or whatever questions or doubts we might have, anger, frustration, or maybe it is joy or gratefulness. And that we would bring that into your presence, and we would be drawn towards you, and you would draw us to yourself, and we would know that you've been here and that you've met us in this place. I pray this in your name. Amen.